As Don said, it's good to see Ronnie back out with us. Good to have our visitors with us again. Good to be more regular and regular. We'll have to quit saying visitor. We want to look this morning at something that I think may be about the most important thing that we could look at. I remember after becoming a member of the Lord's church and seeing a lot of the issues and the problems that existed within the church. Not necessarily things that were being dealt with where I was a member, but things that I heard about in other places, things that I'd heard about from time past. A lot of issues, a lot of problems, a lot of particular subjects that seemed to be very controversial and dividing among brethren. And I can remember when I had an opportunity to talk to someone from another place, usually a preacher or an older, mature Christian. I remember asking very often, what do you think will be the next big issue that the church will be faced with? And I was really consumed with that question of, you know, what is it going to be? And for a couple of reasons. One, maybe just out of curiosity, wanting to know what they saw on the horizon, what kind of things did they see maybe festering under the surface that might come up. One, out of concern, wanting to know, well, if I can know what it is that's going to come, then maybe we can defend better against it. If we knew what the enemy was going to bring in to try to destroy us, well, then we could defend ourselves a little bit better, knowing what was coming. And so I asked that question a lot, and I got a lot of different answers. Some were the same. Some people gave the same answer. But the more that I've thought about it through the years, the more I think that I was really looking for the wrong thing, looking for the wrong answer. Not that it's not good to be aware. Not that it's not good to have our head up, looking around, knowing what's coming, knowing what's out there. It's very dangerous to live in an isolated way, not concerned with things that are happening in other places and things that are destroying the Lord's people in other places. I think, well, that'll never happen here. That's dangerous. We need to be aware. But I think sometimes we can get so focused and caught up on the issues and what's the issue going to be so that we can defend against that issue that we lose sight of really the core, the root of the problem. Lisa and I were talking just the other day about a generation where it seems there are a lot of folks missing. There are a lot of children of older faithful members that are missing and just wondering, what is it? What could be the cause of that? And we were just speculating, just wondering, but I know that there were a lot of issue-oriented type preaching going on about the issues that face the church. And we were just wondering, you know, is it possible that so much focus was put on individual specific issues that the big picture was lost in the process? And I say that because, as I want to see this more, if we just have one opportunity to talk to a group, and that's something coming up. I'm leaving, as was said, this evening, going to Africa. And a lot of times there, we'll be invited to come and speak with a congregation or with a village, or with sometimes just individuals. And that's something we think about on the way. You know, this is one opportunity. What can we say? What can we do? And so, if I were just given one opportunity to talk, if I were just given one lesson to say, you know, here's where you need to put your focus, here's where we need to put our focus, I want to look at a couple of examples. I had asked Terry to read, and I told him Joshua chapter 2. I meant Judges chapter 2. I had Joshua in mind because Joshua is a part of the reading. But I wanted to look at Judges chapter 2, verses 7 through 10, where you've got God's people who have survived the wilderness. They have entered and conquered the land. And now they've been set up by God. They haven't set themselves up. They've been set up by God in the ideal place with the ideal conditions, with the ideal God, so that they might serve Him and live in peace and harmony in this land flowing with milk and honey. And they began well, but they soon lost their focus. They, as we see in chapter 1 of Judges, they didn't completely do everything that the Lord told them to do as far as driving out the inhabitants of the land. So here's the consequence. In Judges chapter 2 and verse 7 beginning, the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which He had done for Israel. Now Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died when he was 110 years old. And they buried him within the border of his inheritance at Timnath-Heres in the mountains of Ephraim on the north side of Mount Gaash. When all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord, nor the work which He had done for Israel. So we read that. There arose a generation that did not know the Lord, nor the work which He had done for Israel. Now the very next verse, verse 11, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And he'll go on in verse 12 to continue to talk about how they forsook God for Baals and the Ashtoreths. And, well, they did evil. What evil? What was it? What was the specific sin they did that we could look at and maybe warn other people about? Maybe try to get people to quit doing that thing. And we don't need to know exactly what the evil was. What we see in verse 10 is they didn't know the Lord. That was their problem. That was their issue. And I would submit to you this morning, that is the issue with anybody that we're talking about today who's not serving the Lord. Maybe they've never served the Lord. Maybe they did for a while and they've fallen away. Maybe there's a generation that arises that doesn't follow God. Why? Because they don't know Him. That is the issue. And that's where we need to put our focus. We need to know the Lord. And we need to teach the Lord to our children, to one another, and to all that we have an opportunity to teach Him to. I'm not suggesting this morning that it's not important to look at specific topics, specific issues, things that come up. We do that quite often here in classes, in lessons, and just conversation with one another. We talk about those things. But if we do that to the neglect of telling people about God and helping them to know God. Now, I don't think for a minute, we've talked about this before, I don't think for a minute that generation rose up and somebody come along one day and said, "Now, do you know the God of Joshua?" And they said, "Well, no, I'd never heard of Him. I never heard anything about that God. You don't remember the story about Him leading your forefathers, your grandparents out of Egypt? No, I don't remember hearing anything about that." I don't think that was the case at all. I don't think it's just that they never heard of God, the idea of they didn't know Him in the sense that He had ever. But they didn't know Him. They weren't acquainted with Him. And it's to have a relationship with God is more than just having an acknowledgement that, yes, He's there. He exists. We've examined the evidence, and the evidence suggests that all this didn't just happen. That there is a God in heaven. So we agree to that. Well, that's not knowing the Lord. To know the Lord is to submit to Him, to love Him, to look to Him for guidance in everything that we do. And that's what you see that these people here in Joshua and Judges 2, see, I did it again. I apologize, Terry. That's what they didn't do. They did not look to God. Turn over to the book of Hosea. Hosea is one of those little books tucked in. It's got 12 chapters, but it's not very long. just after the book of Daniel, before the book of Joel. You have Hosea, and I want to look in Hosea chapter 4. Now, Hosea comes along at a time when we've gone past the judges, we've gone past the kings of Saul, David, and Solomon. The kingdom has divided. And so we come to a time where God's people should be very well acquainted with Him, with all that He's done. Because it's not now just a matter of bringing them out of Egypt. It's a thousand or more years of what the Lord has been doing among His people from the time that He called Abraham to come out of his land. And so look in Hosea chapter 4. God, through Hosea, is sending a message of judgment, but also redemption. But God never sends that message of judgment without giving a reason for it. And He tells the reason. Hosea chapter 4 and verse 6. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I also will reject you from being priests for me. Because you have forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children. What's the problem? Why do we have some who don't remain faithful? Why will some not become faithful? Why will some never obey the gospel? Why are there sinners in the world who, when you try to talk to them about religion, about sin, about salvation, why will they listen? Why won't they listen to you? And I think the answer is there in verse 6. They are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And it's not just that they don't have access to the knowledge. He goes on to say, you have rejected knowledge. And that's the result of a people who don't want to know. Romans chapter 1 gives us some insight as to how God created us. When I say how, I'm not talking about the method, but the result. God created a man who had a knowledge of his Creator. And He gave us evidence. In Romans chapter 1, beginning of verse 18, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness. Do you see the similarity between Romans 1:18? And Hosea 4:6, the people who had forgotten God, who rejected the knowledge of God, and now here he says that the wrath of God is revealed against heaven from all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Beginning at verse 19, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. There's not a person in the world that doesn't have the ability to look around them and see that there is a God. There is a Creator that made me and everything around me. And if there is that God, if I come to that knowledge, if I have that understanding, then that is going to lead me to the next step of I want to know more about that. I want to find that God. As Paul went to Athens, a city wholly given over to idolatry, his soul was vexed as he entered in and saw all of the idolatry, the idols that was that were around him. You see that in Acts 17 and verse 16. But he gets an opportunity to talk to these pagans, these who did not believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he began to talk to them there in verse 23. I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, and I even found an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God. Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, Him I proclaim to you. God who made the world and everything in it, since He is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is He worshipped with men's hands as though He needed anything, since He gives life to all. And since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. And he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth, and has determined their preappointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings, so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as also some of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. Therefore, since we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, something shaped by art and man's devising. Truly, these times of ignorance God overlooked, but now commands all men everywhere to repent, because he has appointed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he has ordained. He has given assurance of this to all by raising him from the dead. When they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some mocked, while others said, "We will hear you again on this matter." And Paul departed from among them. Do you see Paul's logic as he goes through talking to these people who, they don't know God. They have suppressed him. These would be those in Romans 1 who have suppressed the truth. They've rejected God for their idols. But basically what Paul is telling them is, look, you see this world around you. You recognize there is some power, some force behind this. Now, do you think that a God that can create this world, the God who gives you life, the God who sustains your life, do you think that that God, that we could just take some gold or silver and we could fashion this little image over here, and that is going to be the God that did all of this? The God that gives you life, the God that sustains your life, the God that gives us the ability to continue to reproduce and bring additional life into this? You think that makes sense? And so he goes through, he's not saying, "Hey, look guys, I'm going to tell you about this God, and y'all just need to have faith, and don't worry about any evidence, don't worry about any reason or any logic, you just need to accept these old wives' fables, these tall tales." Well, he's not going to put it like that, but Paul is not asking them to believe in something that's unreasonable. He's not asking them to have a blind faith and just follow this. He's giving them reason. He's giving them logic. He's saying, look around you. And God has given that to every one of us, so that we are without excuse. But if we know that there is a God, and we've heard about this one who's been raised from the dead, then what do? We look for him. We want to find him. And so in verse 27, he says, they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might, you know, just grope around. Maybe I can get him. But what Paul said, he's not far from each one of us. In fact, he came down from heaven to appear to man, to show us who he is. And while we don't have time this morning, the evidence for that is overwhelming. And it cannot be denied by any who are truthful with the evidence that's there. So we've got the problem of people who don't know God. And they don't know God because they don't want to know God. You know, we can, and we should, caution parents about, we need to teach our children, but our children one day are going to be old enough to stand on their own, and whether we've taught them or not, they are responsible for finding God for themselves, whether their parents have helped them or not. It's parents teach them about God. But if there arises a generation that does not know God, they're not immune to God's wrath and judgment on them because their parents failed. Because they, just as we've been looking, have the opportunity to find God. So they don't know God because maybe they haven't been taught, but ultimately they reject God. They haven't been willing to submit to his will. So the problem is sin. The problem is, if there's a God, and he's going to judge us, Paul says that he's going to come and judge. Verse 31, he has appointed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he has ordained. If that's true, then that means that I have a standard to live by. And it's not mine. That means that somebody else has set some rules, set some regulations about what is righteous and what is unrighteous, and I have to submit to that. Someone else has laid a path before me, has given me the steps that I should follow, and I have to follow them. I don't get to decide for myself. I don't get to choose what I want to do. I don't get to choose what's right or what's wrong. God has established all of that. And quite frankly, there are a lot of people in this world who they're not willing to sign up for that. And you see it just in the spirit of people. This rebellious spirit. Whether you're talking about God above or you're talking about whoever's in power in the nation. Whether you're talking about the police officer on the corner or the governor in the state mansion. You know, they're in positions of authority, and today people just love to thumb their nose up at who put them in charge. They're so dumb, they don't know anything, and I don't have to follow those rules, and if I could just tell them. And there's just this rebellious spirit, and it's not just with young people. It's with older folk. There's a man that, I tell you, he's got a lot of good qualities about him, but we went off one time, and we were at a park, and the rule in the park was your kids weren't allowed to ride in the back of the pickup. We didn't know that was the rule. We thought, you know, we're just going to drive right around here. We put the kids in the back. Well, we got pulled over by one of the park rangers. And right off, this guy started, oh, here comes that park Nazi. Really? You know, he's doing his job. There are rules, and we have to follow the rules. I might not like the rules, but it's the rules. But it's people like that with that rebellious spirit who, they don't know God. They don't want to know God. Because if they did, they'd have to actually do what the Lord has called them to do. But while there are a lot of issues out there that we need to address, that we need to talk about, that we need to warn people against, we have to know God. And we have to teach other people about God and about His supremacy and about our need to submit to Him. There's going to be that judgment day that Paul speaks of. He's given assurance of this by raising him from the dead, raising Christ from the dead. Some mocked at that. But I want to show you a picture of that. And hopefully this thing didn't want to work earlier, but maybe I can manually get it up here. The book of Revelation, Chapter 4, there is a picture of God's throne in chapter 4. And I think to remind God's people that God is still on His throne. At the time the book of Revelation was written, things for God's people in this world were terrible. There were many being killed, persecuted. Just day by day, they faced the adversity that we just really, I don't think, could imagine today. And some might begin to think, well, if there's really this God and you're really His people, then why is all this happening? And so they needed to be reminded that God was still on His throne. And so we see that in chapter 4. The end of 4, there's a description of this scroll. And I'm sorry, beginning of chapter 5. And I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll written inside and on the back, sealed with 7 seals. And I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the scroll and to loose its seal?" And no one in heaven or on earth under the earth was able to open the scroll or to look at it. And I thought, well, no big deal. You know, it's a piece of paper, it's a scroll, it's got something written on it. You know, who cares if it's open or not? But John, he recognized the importance of this scroll. And he recognized the shape that the world's going to be in if there's nobody that can open this thing, loose those seals. We're told in verse 4 that he wept much because there was no one found worthy to open and to read the scroll or look at it. But one of the elders said to me, "Do not weep. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has prevailed to open the scroll and to loose its 7 seals." And here we have the Lion. Yeah, I think it's a pretty majestic looking lion. In fact, you don't find many lions that don't look pretty majestic. They just have that look about them. And when we think of God, when we think of Jesus Christ, you think of power, you think of strength. And if it were up to us, I think why didn't God just take that power and that strength, and why didn't he just deal with sin? Why didn't he just deal with people and just conquer and overcome and just be done with it? Well, the problem is we'd all be swept up in that. Because if it's just about power and might and conquering, we'd all be conquered because we've sinned and we're worthy of the judgment that comes from God and his wrath. As John is told that there is this lion of the tribe of Judah that has prevailed to open the scroll and look at it, maybe he's got something like this in mind. But then he turns around and he sees a lamb as though it had been slain. I put this picture up for the kids in our Bible class. And I said, here's someone's representation of what they read here. But I don't think they read the whole thing. Because this lamb is slain. This lamb is laying there. He's dead and somebody's tucked the scroll under his legs. What we read about here is this one that the elder talks about, this lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, he prevailed to open the scroll. And then in verse 6, when he looked in the midst of the throne, the four living creatures, he saw a lamb as though it had been slain, having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. And he came and took the scroll out of the right hand of him who sat on the throne. So he's not just laying there. Somebody said, well, here's your scroll. He came and took the scroll. And this isn't a great picture, but it's about the best one I could find. I'm not an artist, so I couldn't draw what I had in mind. But here is a lamb who's standing. He's not dead. He is wounded, mortally wounded, there where he would have been slain. But what a wonder. This is the picture. This is what John saw. Something like this. And I wonder if John stopped to think, well, wait a minute. What happened to that lion? Where did he go? I don't know that John thought that. He had spent enough time with Jesus to know that it wasn't just about four. In fact, John was one of the ones in Luke chapter 9 when he and his brother James, the Samaritan village, wouldn't receive Jesus. He said, you want us to call down fire from heaven and consume them? And Jesus said he didn't come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And so I think John recognized that, yes, Jesus is that lion. He has that power and that might, but that's not enough. There also has to be the lamb. There has to be the sacrifice. I was talking to the kids, and I said, you can see it a little bit better in this picture. The seven horns and the seven eyes. I've seen lambs, and we can picture a slain lamb, but it's a little harder to picture seven horns and seven eyes. And I wonder if John was meant to, and then in turn we're meant to see this deformed-looking kind of creature with all these horns and all these eyes, or if we're to understand something a little bit more about this lamb. And I think it's the latter. We'll go back to this one. You can see the eyes up there a little bit and the horn. Horns in the Bible represent strength and power. You see that in a lot of the book of Daniel, chapters 7 and 8. You see that quite a bit. The number 7, complete. And I think here we have a picture of a lamb who has all power. The eyes, obviously eyes, it tells us of the seven spirits of God. Way back in Genesis chapter 1, we had the Spirit of God who was hovering over the face of the deep. He was everywhere. And he could see all things. And I think that's the picture we're getting here. Here's a lamb who has all power. He has all vision. You know, this lamb, he wasn't just grazing in the field one day, and here come a wolf sneak up behind him, caught him off guard, and overpowered him. That's what a lot of people looking on thought happened. That's not at all what happened. Those chief priests and the elders, we got Judas. We got an inside man. And we'll catch him off guard. We'll get him there at night. And he won't have anybody around him to help him. They're fooling themselves. They didn't fool Jesus. Jesus knew exactly what was coming. And he had the power to overcome what was coming. But he chose not to. And as we read this passage, this is John's view as he's in they're seeing this vision in heaven. Here's what it looked like on earth, or at least something like it. A lamb as though it had been slain, but it prevailed to open the scroll. And as we think about the problem that exists, and we don't know God, people don't know God, and that's why sin exists. That's why people persist in sin. They fall away. They never come to the Lord. They don't know God. And there he is. He was willing to give his life. Willing to send his son to the earth. Willing to have that son sacrificed so that you and I could be saved from the consequence of the sin that we commit. I tell you, that's a God that I want to serve. A God that loves me so much and cares enough for me that he's willing to give his son. And I've heard multiple people say it. And I probably, in truth, maybe I would have to make the same statement of, I don't know that I could do that. I don't know if I could sacrifice that way. I tell you, we have to sacrifice. That's what God calls us to do. And we won't do it perfectly. We'll continue from time to time to choose what we want rather than what God wants. But it won't be our life. It won't be our way of life. Our way of life is that we look to God for direction, for guidance. We'll know Him, He will know us, and we will let Him lead us and guide us because not only is He able, but He's worthy to be followed. He has the ability to lead, and He is worthy to lead. And so, as we close, think of this question. Have you counted the cost? Those in the days of the judges who grew up who did not know the Lord, they suffered greatly as a result. Those in Hosea's day, they suffered greatly because they had fallen away from God. They were destroyed. Throughout the book of Revelation, we find God's judgment coming upon those who would not repent. Have you counted the cost of not following God? Have you counted the cost of rejecting God, not knowing God? Well, if you've truly counted the cost, then the only reasonable conclusion that we could come to is it's not worth it. Having my own way, doing my own thing, maybe enjoying some pleasures of this life that otherwise would be missed, it will never be worth losing your soul over. And so let's submit to our Lord while we have the opportunity to do so. If there's any way we could help you while you come, while together we stand and sing.